It's Monday, the 11th of November, 2019, and this is HPR episode 2941 entitled Server Basics 107, Mini Shift and Container Management. It is the 230th anniversary show of Klaatu, and it's about 39 minutes long. It carries a clean flag, and the summary is Klaatu introduces Mini Shift, a local test environment for a single node cloud.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu. In this episode, I want to continue my Server Basics series. This is 107 in the series, covering container management with Kubernetes, or thereabouts. Astute listeners might notice that this isn't directly really a topic about server basics. This is something really specifically about serverless basics. Serverless being sort of a buzzword right now, implying that there are no servers, that there is but the cloud. Of course, that's also not true because the cloud runs on something, and whether you call them servers or not, that's what they are. They're servers running a cloud. It's just that there are lots of servers involved. Buzzwords aside, this episode is covering, and the previous episode, I decided to cover these technologies because realistically, if you go out and get a job as a sysadmin somewhere, then one of the tasks that you're going to encounter on the job, you're going to be expected to be able to do, is to probably deal with infrastructure of some kind of cloud, whether it's a hybrid cloud that's mostly hosted on site across several different servers, or whether it's a globally networked system of servers, or something that you rent somewhere, whatever it might be, there's going to be an expectation that you can manage that kind of infrastructure. And the problem up until very recently with that expectation is that there was no realistic way for a new user to ever learn the skill, which of course traditionally, at least for me, has been a huge strength of Linux and open source software in general, was that you're able to learn the things that you could ultimately get paid for at home. You could just learn it on your own time for free for $0, and then you could go into a workforce and get paid for that knowledge. It's a huge, huge advantage. I'm speaking from experience, it has been an advantage for me. So I think that it's important to maintain that level of zero barrier to entry. And that's been a problem with the quote-unquote cloud technologies up until fairly recently. You could rent some space on a proprietary cloud platform, and they would charge you by bandwidth or something like that. And it was all very confusing, and it wasn't $0. And there are a couple of clouds out there that will offer you space and time on their system in exchange for money. There is one from Oracle right now, not that I'm recommending Oracle, but Oracle supposedly has an entry-level cloud platform that you can sign up for, and they've got a bunch of restrictions on it, but it does have kind of a GUI front end that you can play around with stuff through your browser. With all of that said, none of these options are ideal. And if you are just some random person seeking to either get into technology or seeking to upskill in technology so that you can get better work, what do you do if you don't have access to a big fancy cloud? Well, I can get you about 60% of the way there with either a thing called Minikube or Minishift. Now, these are two separate projects, and the one I'm going to cover in this episode is Mini Shift, because it's the one that I have more experience with, and I think it's a pretty easy way to get started with this stuff. In the previous episode, in 106, I was talking about containers and how containers are defined by namespaces and how these namespaces protect processes or a group of processes from sort of being aware of the environment upon which they're actually running. And I talked about how that concept is part of this whole container idea, this concept that, or this system by which we can run a sort of an embedded OS, like an operating system, on a computer with an operating system. And it's a hugely powerful thing, whether or not you approve of the design concept is more or less irrelevant at this point, because they've kind of taken off, at least for right now. They do seem to be the method by which people have chosen to deploy applications that need to scale quickly and dynamically. The answer is literally to just spin up another container somewhere or another set of containers somewhere to handle additional traffic or additional activity. Should something fail on that within that container, then the container crashes or stops and relaunches, picking up more or less where it left off. It does this by ensuring that there's no data being stored inside that container. This is a very confusing concept to most people who are used to maintaining a server or even a virtual machine, where that thing, the computer, whether it's real or virtual, contains the user data and the data and the configurations and the history and everything that has ever happened in that space. But in a container, the idea is that nothing is contained in the container except the stuff that needs to run, just sort of the logic of the program itself. Everything that it needs to run in a certain configuration or data that it needs to process is stored external of the container. So the result is that you have this set of servers with a distributed file system across each server, and they are running little instances of just enough operating systems in a little container that process that run applications and then process data. And when there needs to be more of that, then another server in that cloud maybe pops into existence, or rather comes to life and generates or launches another instance of the container that you need in order to process all your new all the data that's coming into your cloud. And when that's all processed and done, those containers die off and that server sort of sits dormant until something like that happens again. And maybe it's a completely different container that happens on. But it's a dynamic environment where applications being run on a miniature, tiny operating system instance gets spawned and killed off as needed. When you have something like that, there is a need, people have found, to be able to monitor what's going on. For instance, how many instances of a specific container are running right now? How is the latency between the synchronization of files on the file system? How's the RAM doing, and so on? So there needs to be some way to manage all of these resources, to look into them, maybe even to give developers access to some portion of that, so that when they are developing, they can fire up a new container when they need, rather than when the cloud thinks they need it, or maybe they need to simulate traffic in order to test the cloud, whatever. You need some kind of interface into that. The interface into that is called Kubernetes, which is a Greek word derived from, or rather, Kubernetes is derived from a Greek word for the concept of pilot, P-I-L-O-T, the pilot of a ship. So Kubernetes is an open source technology designed to orchestrate, as they say, containers. It is naturally just a command line application. It's a command that you run from a terminal to spawn and kill and monitor containers. And you can get started with Kubernetes just with pure Kubernetes. You can do that. However, it's a little bit cumbersome to do serious tasks exclusively with the Kubernetes command. And for that reason, there are several front ends for Kubernetes, both terminal-based and as GUI applications. Now, the one that I've used because of my day job is OpenShift. OpenShift is essentially a GUI front end for Kubernetes, which is an orchestrator of containers. The advantage to OpenShift is that it is an open platform based on a project called OKD, which I imagine stands for Open Kubernetes something, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, it's based on this thing called OKD, which is an open source operating system, if you will, for the cloud. Now, that's not strictly true, but if we consider the cloud as the platform, which in a way is true, right? I mean, the cloud has to run on something. So to build an open source cloud, you would have a bunch of computers, and on each computer, you would install an open source operating system, maybe Fedora or Debian, whatever you like. On that operating system, you would install a distributed file system like Ceph, that's C-E-P-H, or theoretically Gluster, but I've heard Ceph is kind of the way to go. And on that file system, you would install components of OpenStack, including the GUI interface called OpenShift. OpenShift would be the web admin panel that people would log into to monitor the status of the cloud and to look at how many containers they have running and so on. Now, that's a completely open source cloud, and it would be very cool to have one, and it'd be fun to try out, and you could do this. I mean, you could buy a bunch of pies and have a little Pi cloud or something, and they would be spinning up things as needed and doing all kinds of different activities. You could try that, but realistically speaking, it's going to be difficult to come up with an appropriately sized personal cloud, by which I mean the file system, for instance. For failover protection, for failure, to make sure that it's always available and so on, it needs a certain number of nodes, so that it can synchronize between servers. And in theory, you can have a two node setup, but it's not recommended, and it's a little bit unreal. Well, it's a lot bit unrealistic. You could do it for testing, I guess. Really, it ought to be at least three, and then preferably a lot more nodes for proper synchronization and robustness. The likelihood of someone learning Kubernetes just by first setting up a personal cloud is rather low. That's kind of a demanding gateway to get through. So what a couple of people have developed is a thing called mini shift or mini cube, but again, I'm going to focus on mini shift because it's the one that I know. They've developed mini shift, which is a quasi-virtualized private single node cloud. So it's completely useless in production. You would never use mini shift in real life. The advantage to it is that it mimics down to the last little icon. I mean, it just mimics completely an actual OpenShift environment. And OpenShift, again, is one of the interfaces to a cloud that you will encounter in the real world. I have several friends working at lots of different types of organizations, financial and artistic, and they're using OpenShift there to manage their resources. So you'll definitely encounter it. It's not the only one out there. There are others, and I guess you could probably go to that Oracle Cloud One thing where they're offering free entry levels, and you could sign up for that, and you'd get dumped into their web admin, and there would be a different web UI. Although, honestly, I kind of glanced at it, and it looks really, really similar to the OpenShift OKD MiniShift thing. I don't know what they're running, but it looked pretty familiar to me. You could go to AWS and you'd find a different interface. You could go to Azure and you'd find a different one. So there are different ones out there, but the idea is that, or the ideas that they contain are going to be pretty similar. I mean, the tasks that are involved often are not dissimilar. So in other words, I'm saying if you learned MiniShift, you'd be set up then to go straight into work on OpenShift, and potentially you'd have a leg up when you if you were to go working on some other non-open cloud platform as well, because you'd just be that much more familiar with common tasks involved in making these things work. So how do you get MiniShift? Well, the first thing you need to do is make sure that you've got the ability to run MiniShift on your computer. You probably do in this day and age, but you want to do the whole egrep dash dash only dash matching dash dash word dash regex and then single quote vmx pipe svm close single quote. So that's a regex for looking for either vmx or svm in slash proc slash cpu info. Intel CPUs use the VMX virtualization, AMD CPUs return SVM. So as long as you see something returned with that query, then you're good to go. Your computer's capable of doing this task. Like I say, in the modern day and age, I think it would be rare to find a computer that doesn't have those technologies. I mean, at least it would be rare to find a computer that you reasonably believed would be capable of doing like modern virtualization stuff. Okay, so once you've got all that, you need the KVM stack installed. KVM is, of course, the Linux kernel-based virtual machine. It is in mainline kernel now, so it's pretty common. You may already have it installed. You probably have it installed, but you do want the QEMU or KMU or however you say that word, QEMU-KVM packages. Whatever your distribution calls the QEMU-KVM portion, you want to make sure that that's installed. It might be bundled together with QEMU it might just be a big monolithic package. It may not be. Check to make sure that it's either available or installed, and you'll be good. Okay, so once you've got that, you want to enable the virtualization daemon. So that would be probably sudo systemctl enable dash dash now libvertd. It might be called something different on your system. On my Slackware system, the command is not a systemctl command. It's a slash etc slash rc.d slash rc.libvert space start. But just look into how to start libvert and and start that, enable that to run on your system. You also want to add yourself to the libvirt group. To do that, you can do a sudo usermod dash lowercase a dash capital G libvirt and then your username, clat2. Use the new group command to log into the new group by running new group, that's newgrp space dash space libvirt. And then if you run the groups command, you should see that your login has been updated with you included in the libvirt group. You need to do that in order to interact with the mini shift or actually the OKD tool chain that's kind of supporting mini shift. And then finally, you're going to need to install some Docker tools. Now, we're not actually directly using Docker in this process, but there are still some tools to parse configuration files or to look at definitions, and I think even to run some binaries that you do need to install. This is probably subject to change realistically. Docker has gone through a lot of changes, certainly since episode 1522 when I first talked about it, but even just within the past year or so, it's undergone a lot of changes. I'm not 100% clear on the future of Docker. It seems like the whole container thing has taken a wild swing towards the truly open source, whereas Docker has taken a wild swing to not being as open source. It's quite confusing if you go to their page, to their website, but for now, Docker is sort of the de facto default for a lot of the container images and commands. So you will need to install that. Installing just Docker machine is something you can do from GitHub. It's curl dash dash location and then https://github.com/docker/machine/releases/download. Obviously, this is current as of this recording, and it's probably outdated by the time you hear this. /v for version 0.16.1/docker-machine-linux with a capital L dash backtick uname dash I close backtick redirect to /download/docker-machine. Then you want to mark that executable, so chmod plus x /download/docker-machine, and then you want to probably move that, well, you certainly want to move that to some location in your path. So if you do an echo $path, capital P-A-T-H, then you'll see your path. Move this Docker machine executable to somewhere in that path. I usually put it in /user/local/bin. You could maybe put it in /opt if that's in your path. You could, as a last resort, put it in /user/bin. It's up to you. And in addition to Docker machine, you're going to need the KVM driver for Docker. So that's a separate thing that you need to download, and that one I can't be quite as explicit as to how to get that. You'll want to go to the GitHub site of dhiltgen and look at the Docker machine dash KVM releases and get the one appropriate for your distribution. So that's github.com/dhiltgen/docker-machine-kvm. The process of installing it, such as it is pretty similar. You just mark it executable, and then you move it to somewhere in your path. And that's usually docker-machine-driver-kvm is, I think, the expected name of that executable. So now you're set up. You're set up to install Minishift. And Minishift is distributed as a self-contained pre-compiled binary. You can go get the source code and compile it yourself, but it's written in Go, or a lot of it is, so you need a full Go development environment. So you're welcome to do that. It's at github.com/minishift. But if you don't want to do that, then you can just install it yourself from their precompiled binary that they release. And again, you get that from github.com/minishift. Just go to the releases, look at the latest release, and grab that. It'll download a tar file, a .tgz. You can untar that and once again move it to some place in your path. So now you've got Minishift installed. All you need to do is start it. Starting it is a rather manual process, and I think it's okay. I mean, you could write a, I could imagine writing a desktop file for this, but I feel like that would be almost overkill, and you probably want to see the output anyway. So I've never bothered with that. I've always just started it from the terminal and just set that terminal aside while it was running. So to start it, you do minishift space start. You'll see a bunch of output. It gives you a lot of different sort of status updates of what it's checking to see is true or valid, and it runs all of these processes, and then finally it tells you that it's all started, it's OpenShift server has started, and that the server is accessible over a web console at some address. Let's call it 192.168.168.168:8443/console. If you open a web browser and navigate to that IP address, and again, it will tell you the IP address. The standard port is 8443, and the path is slash console, so it'll be some variation of that, but it will tell you that in the terminal output where to find this console. You log into, or you open a web browser, you navigate to that page, and you'll see a login screen. Now, you will probably get an SSL certificate warning because the SSL certificate being used by this Minishift instance is a self-generated SSL certificate. So accept the warning or ignore the warning or whatever you need to do to get past that. In real life, you would change to a self-signed certificate and distribute that to the people that need access, or you would get a CA signed certificate or whatever. But for this, obviously, for your own machine, it's not that big of a deal. So click through that, and then sign in. And the way that you'll sign in is using the username developer and the password developer. The Minishift landing page that you'll see straight away, at least at the time of this recording, obviously everything's subject to change. I mean, they're developing it, I'm sure, all the time. But by default, and I think generally, you'll get to a landing page that encourages you to get started with something. And since you're logged in as a developer, it assumes that your workflow is going to mirror a typical developer workflow. This is a pretty good way to get a feel for what Minishift is all about. So you may as well go down that path, at least initially, especially since without anything existing in your Minishift cloud, there's not a whole lot to monitor or adjust. So you want to create something for yourself, if only so that you can then imagine what might happen in the real world. You would have these pods running, these little containers running and generating and spawning and scaling up and so on. So in order to see that in action, you kind of need to create something. So you can click on Create Project pretty much right after logging in, and then enter the name for a project, maybe Hacker Public Radio, for instance. Click Create, and then click the project name in the project list to enter its overview panel. And a project is not a container. It is simply it's an interface or a wrapper, I guess, around expected applications. For instance, let's say that there's a project that you're working on, or that someone is working on your cloud, and you need to, as part of the project, is that they need a web server to be running. Well, luckily there are pre-built projects for that, so you could browse. You can click the Browse Catalog button in the interface, in the MiniShift interface. Oops, and look around, and you'll find a basic Nginx template. That opens a configuration window. You can click Try Sample Repository link to auto-fill out all the fields. It fills it with demo content from OpenShift's project page on GitHub. And so once that's all filled out, then you click Create again. And now you've got a sample application that runs Nginx. Now, it won't always be that easy, because presumably at some point someone will be developing a project that does not exist yet, that doesn't have a pre-built template for you. But just to get something going, that's a pretty simple process. So if you create a project, then you can create applications within that project, and if you want, just to learn, you can use pre-built applications. Okay, so once you've got a sample application like this Nginx one, for instance, then you can close the window and click the Overview tab on the left of the web console. You'll see the toolbar on the left. It's expandable. Get used to that toolbar. That's kind of the place that you're going to keep going back to frequently. In the Overview panel, you can click the title of your application to view its progress and the state of that application. So, I mean, you have to wait for it to build or to download the template, and then to build it into what they call a pod. But once that's done, then you'll see an overview panel. It'll tell you where to find the application. So, for instance, to go see the It Works page, or whatever it is on Nginx. I haven't seen it in a while, but that start page that a web server provides, so that you know that it's running. In order to see that, it'll give you the URL. It'll give you the URL of that start page, so you can go take a look at it and confirm that it's working. And at this point, I think you'll probably see, like, if you've installed it and you've done everything that I've said, just set up a sample application, you'll kind of get a feel for the interface and the things that you would maybe normally be looking for. For instance, how many instances of this web server are running right now? How could we scale it up? How could we add more instances if maybe there's a spike in traffic? Now, obviously, in real life, the administrator wouldn't be the one literally monitoring the traffic and scaling up the application with frantic mouse clicks as more people log in. That's not how it would work. But being able to log in and look at that and see, and then do a manual override maybe as needed, that's all useful information. And obviously the toolbar on the left is well worth exploring. Another thing worth exploring is what's actually happening behind the scenes. So this is the fancy GUI that a lot of people will see at their day job. But somebody's looking at this thing from a different angle, and the gateway to everything that the web console is doing is a command called OC. Now, MiniShift ships with a command to, and I think OpenShift does as well, now that I'm saying that, but there's a command to set up your environment so that MiniShift knows, or rather OC knows, where your cloud data is stored. So you can see this for yourself by running MiniShift space OC.env to actually implement it, to apply it to your environment. Do an eval space backtick MiniShift space OC-env backtick. Then you can log in as the admin user. OC space login space dash u space system colon admin. Keep in mind, on a real OpenShift server and environment, you'd be logging in with LDAP or OAuth or something like that. But this is a hyper local test environment. It knows that it's a test environment. So direct sort of default passwords and everything, it's just, it's fine. Okay, so we're going to do an OC space git space users, and that shows you all the users on your open, on your mini shift environment. And you'll find that there's one user, and they're called developer. That's that default user that we just used to log into the web console. You can also view this user's projects with OC space project, and you can create new projects like OC space new dash project space GNU world order dash dash display dash name equals GNU world order dash dash description equals quote GNU world order close quote. It's a lot of the same data for a lot of different options, but I couldn't think of anything off the top of my head, so there you go. You could also create new applications. So the new project is the thing that you did when you first logged into the web console to create a new a place for applications to live. To create the application itself, you can just do OC space new dash app, and then the location of the application Git repository. And you know, as usual, you'd kind of have to know the environment and know what you want to do. There are sample ones online. You can use those. It's like if you go to github.com/sclorg, there are a couple of sample projects there. There's a couple. I think that one is actually linked from OpenShift GitHub. But if you go to OpenShift GitHub, you'll find sample applications, and it's the same stuff that you looked at when you installed Nginx as an application. So the OC command, in other words, is the terminal command version pretty much of MiniShift or OpenShift or OKD. Trying both of them, kind of getting used to both of them, is not a bad idea. And that's about all I can say about MiniShift. It's something that you should try if you're interested in getting started with the cloud, because it's a great example of an open source interface for cloud, for container management and orchestration. And for monitoring, too. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff out there, obviously, that can hook into OpenShift. But OpenShift is a really great, or MiniShift as well, is a really great place to start locally to get a feel for what exactly would go into managing these sorts of things. Click around, learn new tricks, go to learn.openshift.com or whatever it is. Yeah, learn.openshift.com, I think, or .io, one of those two. You can get a feel for common tasks that would be something that an admin would have to do. It's the way to learn this stuff. So hopefully that helps you sort of break through a lot of the buzzwords and confusion about what exactly the cloud is and how it exists and how it runs. The idea that there are open source and hybrid clouds out there that do not rely on imaginary server farms that are owned by corporations that you can never quite put your finger on. Don't do that. Learn MiniShift, learn OpenShift, learn Kubernetes. That's the way to get started on the cloud, the open source way.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.